Through the years, I've had several opportunities to talk with Frank Schaefer a couple of times about the books that he's written with and about his son, United States Marine, also about a couple of books that he's written about his faith. Frank and his family were very, 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 very important to the evangelicals in this country who had political aspirations. In fact, a few years ago, I talked to him about his book, Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. Now Frank is out with, well, he's written so many books I've lost track, but I think we could call this the third one in his autobiographical trilogy about his life with and without evangelicals. It's called Sex, Mom, and God, How the Bible's Strange Take on Sex Led to Crazy Politics and How I Learned to Love Women and Jesus Anyway. Frank, it's good to talk to you again. Welcome to the show.
It's really nice to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing just great. You still hold the record for longest subtitles of any books I've ever had to talk about on the radio.
Well, you know, the subtitle is kind of Woody Allen-esque in that it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but I always like a subtitle to pull me into the text. I figure the title's short enough, Sex, Mom, and God, so why not try to explain a little bit with the subtitle? And I think it does that.
Let's give a little bit of history here before we talk about this book. Give me like a 60-second history of your role with the religious right.
Well, I'm 59 years old today and a grandfather, but if you rolled the clock back 30 years plus to my early 20s, you would have found that I was my dad's sidekick, my dad being the evangelical leader Francis Schaefer and my mother Edith Schaefer, that figures very heavily in this book, Sex, Mom, and God. And at that time, you might have found me flying around in Jerry Falwell's borrowed jet, appearing on the 700 Club with Pat Robertson, having 150,000 copies of a book I wrote as an evangelical angry screed back in those days called A Time for Anger, given away by James Dobson on Focus on the Family. So I was just in the thick of the whole thing. But I guess to put it in a nutshell, what really projected my dad and myself as his sidekick and as the filmmaker that put his words into some documentaries into the public eye, at least in the evangelical ghetto, was the Roe v. Wade decision on abortion in 1973. And my dad was one of the first evangelical leaders to speak up on the so-called pro-life side, and really that movement grew up around him. And the movie I made called Whatever Happened to the Human Race that took his ideas on abortion and Dr. C. Everett Koop, who became Surgeon General under Ronald Reagan, to a very wide public in the evangelical community. Having said that, the general public probably had never heard of him then and certainly wouldn't know him now. But if you asked, for instance, Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush or recent candidates, you know, on the Republican side of the ticket this year, like Michelle Bachmann, why they got into politics or why they have a pro-life stance, most of them would trace back their thinking to the book and film projects my dad and I did in the 70s and early 80s. So that's kind of the nutshell version of what we were up to that I do also describe in Sex, Mom, and God, as well as why I got out of the movement.
Yeah, see, this is the interesting thing to me about you, because with that as the basis of your public life for so many years and your public influence for so many years, you have done a 180 on that and now can look at it from a completely different viewpoint. And what is that viewpoint now as we go into what is going to be a big presidential year where a lot of these same issues still resonate within our political sphere?
Well, you know, I'm an unlikely but very avid supporter of President Obama, and I wrote a lot for the Huffington Post and Alternate and other media when he was first running for the presidency against the Clintons. I say the Clintons, not just Hillary Clinton, and then have followed that up. And so I guess this 180, if you're talking about politics, would take me from being a radical right-wing, you know, bomb-throwing evangelical on the far right to a position of what I would call just sort of moderate sanity, not so much political, but just in terms of social views and political views. You know, for instance, in Sex, Mom, and God, I talk about why I don't really buy into the Christian Zionist view of foreign policy, where somehow we're waiting for Jesus to come back, and so, you know, we have to defend the state of Israel no matter what, because otherwise Jesus can't come back again if they don't get Judea and Samaria. These crazy things which shape so much of American, not just foreign policy, but then, you know, movements like the Tea Party, that you want to downsize the government because we've so demonized the government as being pro-abortion, pro-gay, and so forth, that we play right into the hands of the Koch brothers and Goldman Sachs and the others who really aren't interested in the social issues, but are very glad to have middle class and lower middle class, particularly white evangelicals, voting for them en masse, and their interests en masse on the under the pretext of upholding biblical law against gay rights or for abortion rights or whatever it may be. And so I guess, you know, my views did the 180 because I had never lived in the States before. I had crisscrossed it with my dad on these tours, you know, hotel to venue, back to hotel again. But when my wife Jeannie and I moved here in 1980 from Switzerland, where my dad's ministry was, though we were Americans, and I began to live in this country, I just found a very different reality on the ground than we were describing from a right-wing kind of living in a bubble point of view. So I wouldn't say it was so much as a political change as a move from, you know, the la-la land of the village idiots of the evangelical Republican fringe to, you know, what I would regard as just a moderate, sane position.
So what do you think of those like Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum who still drive a lot of the Republican message or try to drive a lot of the Republican message with those same evangelical messages that you and your father were pushing three decades ago?
Well, I think there's two kinds of Republicans running for office right now. There's the sort of Newt Gingrich type who doesn't really personally believe anything. I knew Newt back in the day, and he's just an opportunist. All the way to the people like Michelle Bachmann who are sincere right-wing evangelical believers, misguided as they might be, they're not putting it on as an act. And of course, the tragedy is that to get a Republican nomination for presidency today, you need to either pretend you are a Michelle Bachmann type when it comes to these issues, or actually be one. And so the way I would describe it is that what the candidates have to do today, either in pretense or in reality, is take the agenda we cooked up in the 70s and 80s. When I say we, I don't just mean Dad and I, but as I describe in Sex, Mom, and God, the whole range of evangelical and fundamentalist leaders cooked up as the kind of litmus tests, and make these the national agenda. And meanwhile, our economy is going down, and our industrial base is shrinking, our jobs are going overseas, we don't have infrastructure, rather we do, but it's sort of like the infrastructure of the 1890s these days, if you ever try to take a train anywhere, etc. And we keep talking about all these issues that are peripheral to the actual well-being of the country. And again, as I said a moment ago, what this actually does is empower the Goldman Sachs, the Wall Streets of this world, who have cashed in on Republican hatred for the federal government so that they're never regulated, so that anybody suspicious of any regulation of business or billionaires paying taxes, because the big bad government that aborts babies, allows gay marriage, has banned prayer from schools, et cetera, is on the side of this regulation. Same thing with global warming. Now we can't believe in it anymore because the government says it's true, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got a really crazy polarized situation that I, again, don't think is so much political, but it is just a question of whether you're going to live a fact-based life or a faith-based life. And if it's a faith-based life, then you can fill in the blank with any nonsense you want. And that's exactly where we see the Republican Party going. It's controlled by people who really believe in non-fact-based politics. And we're in the thrall of these guys, and who knows what the future will hold.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Frank Schaefer about his new book called Sex, Mom, and God. And I think you're exactly right. You know, science be damned. Let's go with what we've believed rather than what has been proven. And that is what drives the Republican Party so far to the right. Even people who are Tea Party supporters, they got involved in the Tea Party because they were fiscal conservatives. They didn't want a government that was going to spend so much money of what they consider to be their money on things that they didn't believe in. And yet the party then gets dragged even further to the right by people who say, well, wait a second, let's get the people who are anti-abortion and let's get the people who are anti-gay marriage, and we'll appeal to them in exactly the way you're talking about here, while it's the ones who are supposedly the core of the Republican Party who are finding themselves being dragged even further and further to the right. And the irony in all of this is, at the end of the day, when we get through the caucuses and primaries and Mitt Romney turns out to be the Republican nominee, he's a guy who has a fairly moderate past, who has, quote, forsaken that, unquote, for the political purposes, but he's going to have to run back towards the middle. And so what's going to happen to these evangelicals in 2012, Frank?
Some of them are going to get embittered enough to pick up a gun, and some of them are going to say that Christ has to come back and save us from whatever the new Antichrist is. Remember, they were saying Barack Obama was the Antichrist a few years ago, and
yeah.
still probably believe it. And the mythology will continue. But meanwhile, when your local town council tries to do something about rising tide levels, if you live in an area by the ocean, or change the curriculum in your school to give a comprehensive sex education, or teach evolutionary biology so we can compete in the modern world, on a local level, the politics will be the same politics that confronted the healthcare reform bills as they came through, with shouting of death panels and all the rest of it. And so you'll just see the rhetoric ramp up. And then on the other hand, if by some fluke one of the real crazies becomes the Republican nominee and God forfend is elected, you will see something like we haven't seen in this country but a few times before, almost as if, say, a Joseph McCarthy had run for president and taken over. So all of a sudden our concern will be to stop Sharia law, though less than 1% of our population is Muslim. Our concern will be to save Israel so that they don't have to make peace with the Palestinians, so Jesus can come back on a timely schedule, before Michelle Bachmann, whoever it is, gets old and dies, and so forth. And crazy as this sounds, this continues to be the agenda. So, what I do in Sex, Mom, and God is I not only trace the history of the movement and our family's part in it, as well as talking about my mother, in I hope very warm terms, explaining she was an exception to the rule, and thereby goes to show you can't generalize about people just because of labels. But that said, the gradual exchange of religion for politics is a story that really hasn't been paid attention to. We keep talking about how religious people are overwhelming the Republican Party, which I show in the book, but I also show in the book that Republican politics has overwhelmed the Christian religion. So we're now in a position where, for instance, the philosophy of Ayn Rand is more popular with evangelicals, if you really question them on their economic ideas, than the philosophy of Jesus Christ. And that's an incredible turnabout. So you have a rapacious, naked, selfish capitalism worshipped as the Christian way, quote-unquote, when actually, if anybody read their New Testament, they would find that if they were taking the teachings of Christ seriously, that the one thing you could be sure of is that he would not have liked Ayn Rand's philosophy. So we really have a weird position right now in history where the Republican Party is religion masquerading under the guise of politics, and religion is Ayn Rand's philosophy masquerading under the guise of religion, and it's a complete reversal of roles. And so the prophetic witness of American Christianity is completely out the window. And on the other hand, we have a Republican Party who's no longer an actual legitimate political party, but instead is a kind of an attempt to both subvert the U.S. government in a revolutionary way by defunding everything, on the one hand, and impose a religious theocracy on this country that would make us very similar to Iran if these people had their way. So we're in quite a little fix here, and I think Sex, Mom, and God is relevant to these issues.
Yep. You put your finger right on it there, Frank, and said it brilliantly here. I do want to ask you, though, since your family was so instrumental in beginning the religious right in this country, do evangelicals hear you talking like this with your history and get angry with you? What's their reaction? Because I know you're online, you're on Twitter, you've never shied away from being in the public eye. You've written all these books, this the third in your God trilogy. What kind of reaction do you get from these people?
Well, from the time I wrote my first novel, Portofino, which was a work of humor somewhat at the expense of fundamentalist Christians and loosely biographical on me growing up in a missionary family in Europe until the present, that was in 1992, until now, two things have happened. A lot of evangelicals have surprised me because a number of them have seen things a similar way and are on the same path. So I guess they wouldn't call themselves evangelicals anymore. But I know this sounds hyperbolic, but I have received thousands of emails from people who say we've been on the same journey. We were right-wing in our views. We were voting Republican. We were all about the anti-abortion movement 20 years ago, and now we've come to see this thing as just absolutely deadly. So the first thing to say is, especially generationally, there are a lot of people from evangelical backgrounds who are getting out of exactly what I'm talking about and who like the books. And then I get my hate mail. I get my crazy, stuff where you kind of halfway wonder if you shouldn't pass them on to the local police station. And then I get a lot of people who are just completely silent, because you have to understand there are a lot of evangelical leaders, particularly, and ordinary people who are Right, and they understand the issues, that they also have accepted a kind of a vested interest in this machinery. I mean, take an evangelical pastor who wrote to me the other day saying, I actually agree with a lot of what you're saying, but how am I supposed to earn my living if I quit this church? And if I said what I really believe from the pulpit, I'd be thrown out. And if I've gotten one email like that, I've gotten dozens. So I think the reaction's all over the map, but I will say this, I think there's a lot of self-doubt in the evangelical movement today because of the fact that, for instance, on the issue of gay rights, they're losing their younger generation lock, stock, and barrel.
That's exactly the next thing I was going to ask you about, because we do have so much of a generational divide on so many of these social issues. Why are those things not sticking with younger Americans? I don't think that they should, by the way, because I don't think what somebody does with their sex life or
right.
or their genitalia is anybody else's business. But you know, it is an older generation of evangelicals and, frankly, non-evangelicals who are the ones who are driving most of this intolerance. How have they not been able to pass that on to their younger generations?
I think it's what you could now call the Newt Gingrich phenomenon. What I mean by that is just the utter hypocrisy of the family values crowd, wink, wink, nod, nod, who, for instance, are against gay marriage but who have accepted divorce because so many of their own people are doing it.
Yeah.
So really what you have is the typical case of someone who comes from a church taking a hard line on social issues who knows well on a personal level often that, you know, the local pastor is molesting kids in Sunday school, or the local priest has, if it's Roman Catholic bishops pontificating on stem cell research while running a worldwide pedophilia ring that they've covered up for the sake of their institution. You know, how long can this hypocrisy go on? So I think on that particular issue, the manifest hypocrisy, and that doesn't even count the manifest hypocrisy in the gold-digging evangelical community. You know, I can just say personally, when I was in my young 20s, and not even dollars updated for modern times, I was earning more by a factor of 2 times what I've ever earned since having dropped out of the movement. The big bucks are in them, our God hills.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get out or you question it, you know, I was selling books by the pallet load compared to what I would sell individually of my new book, Sex, Mom, and God now. But, you know, that I'm not saying that because it bothers me. I'm just stating that as a fact, that it was like winning the lottery, you know, in terms of the world. So I think when you take younger people and they look at the money-grubbing mega churches with these pastors jetting around and staying in 4-room hotel suites at the top of whatever tower of whatever city they're visiting, combined with the sexual hypocrisy of criticizing gay marriage when the highest divorce rate in America is amongst evangelicals in the southern states, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when you add all this up, I think a young person looking at this, let alone the personal horror stories they confront in hypocrisy in their own communities, I've just had it.
Yep.
So that's where I think they get off the boat.
Yep. I think it's a generation that hates hypocrisy and hates intolerance and, frankly, is surrounded by people who can be themselves more, so they now know more gay people. They know more people from interracial marriages.
Right.
They know more people who are like that. Plus, they see more of that on TV. And yet you have evangelicals who always condemn liberal Hollywood for what it's putting on TV.
Right.
It's not just people in San Francisco and Greenwich Village who are watching Glee and Modern Family. Those are hits across the country, including right here in the heartland of America in Missouri.
Yeah, and when you have news story after news story about groups like, as I talk about in my book, like the C Street outfit, you know, so-called family in Washington that
yeah.
giving virtually free rooms to millionaire congressmen who then use that as a sort of pad and springboard to carry on their affairs when not in Congress railing against people who are against, quote, traditional family values. You know, you do that for a few generations, and I think your credibility goes out the window. So, you know, I think it's that simple. And then I think on an intellectual level, look, the evidence of global warming is all around us. Everybody but a few evangelicals understand this. We face a generational divide on that because the younger people are going to face this onslaught of climate change and the rest of it, and they know it's real, and the proofs are there. So you have a tiny percentage of kind of fringe, quote-unquote, scientists who are in the pay mostly of the global oil business trying to extract the last profits from carbon fuel. Look, you know, when the evangelical church gets behind Exxon Mobil and is in the same corner as Sachs, Goldman Sachs, and so forth, you have a problem with young people who are out there as the 99% trying to demonstrate against the 1% who are gobbling up the wealth of this country. And I think that's part of it, too.
Frank Schaefer's new book, a terrific read. And we didn't even get into 99% of it here today. It's called Sex, Mom, and God, How the Bible's Strange Take on Sex Led to Crazy Politics, and How I Learned to Love Women and Jesus Anyway. Frank, it is really a pleasure to talk to you again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks very much for having me on.